File 10.
Audiobookforfree.com has a special section designed to be used by blind and visually impaired listeners. Enjoy the colourful world of our audiobooks.
Technique number 21. Brush up on man talk. Take a conversational cruise across the gender gap. Huntresses become conversant in concepts, politics, objects, big toys, sports, and other male subjects. Show him you're smart, but remember, not too smart. Hunters, a similar suggestion for you. Generally, women have excellent insights into people, their problems, and their responses to various situations. They talk about health, the arts, personal growth, and sometimes spiritual subjects. When discussing work, women are less competitive. They are more apt to explore how individuals work together and what constitutes a smooth and supportive work environment, not who's on top and who's on bottom. Learn to thoughtfully probe feelings. A suggestion, gentlemen, pick up a copy of Psychology Today, a magazine with a readership of intelligent women. It is an excellent way to brush up on what subjects are hot for women. Technique number 22 for hunters. Brush up on woman talk. Hunters, make your conversation more psychologically oriented. Converse with your quarry in terms of people, feelings, philosophy, rationale, and intuition. And be more supportive, less competitive in your insights. These are generalizations, to be sure. There is always the man who enjoys discussing the deeper aspects of human relationships, and the woman who enjoys a tough political argument. You'll spot these rare birds, but they'll be hard to catch, because the insightful man will be in the company of beautiful women, and the clever woman will already be dating some heavy hitters. And now we come to the section we've all been waiting for, sex. We'll talk about stroking, massaging, and penetrating a man's and woman's hottest erogenous zone. You'll learn all about the creases and the folds of the human body's most erotic organ. What bodily part are we talking about? The brain, your quarry's most erogenous zone of all. When you've mastered manipulation of that organ, you'll have the magic key to make him or her fall in love with you. Crucial element number 6 to make your quarry fall in love with you, fulfilling their deepest sexual fantasies. Every month, magazines print sweeping generalizations about what every man wants or what every woman responds to sexually. But not all women crave their man weaving a rose into her pubic hair. Not all men thrill to finding his woman naked and wrapped in saran wrap hiding behind his bedroom door. Our sexuality is as individual as our thumbprint. General advice on how to be a good lover might work for the proverbial every man or every woman, but you are not every man or every woman. Your quarry is not every man or every woman. You are in bed with one unique individual, and to make that person fall sexually in love with you, you must throw back the sheets and uncover their very special needs. Some like it tough, some like it tender, some like it raucous, some like it refined. Some like it crude, some like it considerate. The variety of desires that falls within the range of absolute, utter, consummate normal is astounding. When I was working with a project, the organization I created for the purpose of collecting data on people's sexual desires, I found only one common thread to both men and women. Everyone liked a partner who was passionate for them. And practically all men wanted a woman who wants to continue to explore her sexuality with him. A woman who is open-minded enough to play. I interviewed a man at the project who had recently started dating his girlfriend, Tanya. He said their lovemaking was exciting, and Tanya seemed open to whatever John did. He was beginning to have serious feelings, he said, i.e. love, for her. One Sunday they were taking a country drive on a long, lonely road which wound through an enticingly private-looking woods. John started to feel those familiar rumblings. He turned to Tanya and said, "Hey, what would you say to a quickie over there in the woods?" John said Tanya looked at him as though he were crazy. Then that night at her house, as they were about to get into bed, John had another adventurous erotic suggestion. He examined her sturdy dresser, which was just about the right height. Full of hope, he said, Honey, why don't you sit up on the dresser and we'll do it there? Again, Tanya frowned and looked at John as though he had gone bonkers. Actually, John said, she went along with it, and they made love with him standing and her sitting on the dresser. But her initial reaction made him feel dirty and guilty for having suggested it. He never again proposed any other unusual position or place for sex. John said that, as much as he liked Tanya, that was the beginning of the end of their relationship. Most men want their woman to be playful and enjoy sex. If you have serious intentions of capturing your quarry's heart, let your rational emotions go and play more, have more fun in bed. Think back to when you were a little girl, rolling around in the sandbox with the other kids, giggling, wiggling, talking, laughing, and building sandcastles. You used your imagination to have fun. Little girls in the euphoria of the moment throwing sand in the air and shouting, "Whee!" aren't having an inner dialogue with themselves. They aren't asking themselves, "Does my playmate really like me? Is he just using me to build sandcastles? Should I fake that I'm having more fun? Is he expressing enough affection? Why doesn't he shout, "Whee!" too? Isn't he enjoying it? Uh-oh, will he play in the sandbox with me when we get back to the city? Children lost in a wonderland of sensual pleasure let their imaginations run wild. They can turn their concerns off and their fantasies on. Well, bed is the adult sandbox, the place to giggle, wiggle, talk, and build fantasy castles. It's the place to let your imagination run wild. Bed is the place to turn your concerns off and your fantasies on. Technique number 23 for huntresses. Be a sexual adventuress with him. If he hints at a sexual activity he wants, unless it really turns you off and you would feel badly about yourself playing with it, do it. Most men want a woman who will be adventurous and accept their requests with open arms, or at least an open mind. Like Diogenes, forever in search of an honest man, males are forever in search of the woman who will fulfill all his fantasies. Huntresses, to get him to fall in love with you, be that woman. Now, hunters, it's a tad different for you. Yes, be playful, but make sure that whatever erotic activity you suggest, you personalize it to her. Technique number 24 for hunters. Be a passionate lover, specifically for her. Hunters, when suggesting sex, make her feel it's her you want. A woman doesn't want a man who is just plain horny. She wants a man who is wildly passionate for her. Avoid phrases like, "let's do it," and substitute instead ideas like, "let me make love to you." So much for generalities. When it comes to sex, the exception is more common than the rule. No two people are alike sexually. Over a period of 10 years at the project, my colleagues and I examined data from men and women from every walk of life. Many thousands of letters flowed into the project, each detailing the sexual attitudes and assets they would like to have in an ideal partner. The diversity in sexual desires was astounding. Actually, I must admit, I learned about sexual diversity the first time I fell in love, even before our more scholarly research confirmed the variety. Some years ago, I was visiting an art gallery in Chicago. Christopher also happened to be visiting the Windy City that day and installing a show of his own art. I spotted him across the room, hanging a curious abstract canvas on the wall. I was instantly attracted to him. Everything about him fit my love map. He was artistic-looking, sensitive, brilliant, and he had lovely, lovely buns. We met, we hit it off, and fortunately he was from New York, too. We started dating back in the Big Apple. It wasn't long before I fell in love with Christopher, and of course I wanted to do everything I could to make him return the sentiment. My relationship with Christopher was almost ideal. We enjoyed the same activities, we liked the same friends, we both loved theater, skiing, and cycling. Sometimes we would stay awake all night talking. I felt Christopher was the one. As time went by, we fell into a wonderful love affair. But Christopher still never said, "I love you." Everything else about our relationship was ideal, so I figured it must be the sex. Christopher never lost himself in the throes of passion. He didn't go wild in bed the way I'd read a man should when a woman really knew how to turn him on. Our sexual scenario was always the same. After dinner, usually at his apartment, we would be talking. Then at some point in our conversation, Christopher would get a cute little grin on his face, put his hand on my shoulder, slide it down my arm to my hand. He'd stand up, sometimes he'd wink, and he'd say, "Come on, little girl." Then Christopher would lead me tentatively into the bedroom. He acted as though he had to proceed gently, cautiously with the seduction, as if I'd say no. Christopher's lovemaking was warm and loving, but also predictable and unpassionate. I figured that would change if I knew just how to push his buttons. I decided I needed to spice things up to make him fall in love with me, but I didn't know how. One afternoon, while pondering this dilemma, my eyes happened to fall on an ad in the Village Voice. It was for a seminar called How to Strip for Your Man. It promised to, quote, "put some spice in your relationship and drive your man wild." Just what the love doctor ordered, I thought. I donned my sexiest underwear and hopped the A-train to the stripper's sixth-floor walk-up apartment in a cheesy suburb. That evening, in her one-room flat, four other women and I learned how to swivel out of our skirts, provocatively let them drop to the floor, and then step seductively out of them. We got step-by-step lessons in how to slide our bra straps down teasingly, flash first our left breast, then our right, then fling the discarded bra across the room as we gyrated our hips. She taught the more agile among us to stretch out on the floor and teasingly whirl our legs around in the air. At the end of the class, our teacher went into her back-of-the-room sales pitch. Optional purchases were a cassette of stripper's music and a set of tassels. The tassels twirled amazingly well on some of the more well-endowed students, but unfortunately my equipment was not sufficient to get one good spin out of them. However, I bought both products, and with the strains of the stripper dancing in my head, I took the train straight to Christopher's apartment. I couldn't wait for his cute little grin, because that was going to be my cue. Sure enough, about 10:45, the corners of his lips went up. "Come on, little girl," he said, as he took my hand and we started toward the bedroom. But tonight was different. Tonight, little girl had a surprise for Christopher. The moment we entered his bedroom, I pushed my astonished lover into the chair. I slipped the cassette into his stereo, and I leaped promptly into my routine. A little fancy footwork around the dresser, 1, 2, 3, va-va-voom, peek-a-boo, 1 breast, 4, 5, 6, va-va-voom, peek-a-boo, the other breast, and then went my bra careening cup over cup across the bedroom, making a perfect 2-point landing right in his lap. But our coach had left out one critical performance skill. It is crucial to keep a constant eye contact with your audience and to know how you are doing. As I was writhing around on Christopher's carpet, twirling my legs, dangerously near his favorite lamp, I might add, I neglected to look at his face. If I had, I would have seen a horrified expression. Christopher calmly stood up and walked out of the bedroom and out of his own apartment. In tears, I gathered up my skirt, my bra, my cassette, my unused tassels, and I ran all the way home. What went wrong? I didn't hear from Christopher for a week. Finally, I called him and said, "Can we talk?" We met for dinner, and talk we did. He was very forthright. I learned that Christopher's idea of sex was seducing a woman, not being seduced. Furthermore, his biggest turn-on, he told me, was not for the woman to be flamboyant and seductive, but to resist. Christopher, it turns out, wanted to feel like the virile seducer, not, as he said, quote, "some lonely, repressed guy who pays to see cheap women dance around." Wow! What an eye-opener that was for me! I resolved at that moment never to make any assumptions about a man's sexual desires again. Every man is different, and so is every woman, and we'll talk about that later. On the surface, it may seem like all men want just one thing. But as I learned, there are many recipes to cook up that one thing. Let's go to the research. How did men's and women's sexual desires differ? Vastly when it came to their sexual fantasies, and even more vastly in what role they wanted their partner to play in their fantasies. Essentially, men's fantasies were more extreme and diverse than women's. Their desires were more tied to specific acts and attitudes. Their fantasies were less connected to the personalities and the emotions of the partner. Often men's fantasies involved control, one partner over the other. One of the more intriguing findings was that men can suspend reality during the sex act and get off more on play-acting than women. Like Alice lost in Wonderland, a man can get lost in fantasy land. Huntresses, this does not mean that men do not crave caring, affection, and love. But when the bedroom door is closed and the lights go down, He wants to lose himself in total sensuality, i.e. have raw sex. And curiouser and curiouser, Alice would say, after several great sessions of raw sex, when no love is spoken of, a man's thoughts are more apt to turn to love. A woman's sexual fantasies, in contrast to a man's, were more complicated. Often they were tied to a partner, not necessarily the one she is in bed with, and emphasized the relationship between the people in the fantasy. A woman's erotic dreams involved her partner's feelings and her own physical and emotional responses to what was going on. Unlike men's fantasies, the mood and the ambience of the encounter played a bigger role. And unlike men, women had less desire to share their sexual fantasies with a partner. Why are men's and women's fantasies so different? Why do women connect love and sex more closely than men? Anthropologists explain it in genetic terms. The female must fight to keep the family together so offspring can grow up and be fed and be protected. Sexologists explain it experientially. Like our personalities, our sexual persona and desires are formed in childhood, especially between the formative years of 5 and 8. During these years, little girls experience more affection than little boys. Mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, and even mommy and daddy's friends all cuddle and kiss little girls. Little girls sit on daddy's lap and hug him more than little boys do. So it is natural that she might have her first erotic feelings while being cuddled. Little boys are not cuddled and kissed as much. They experience affection in a different way. Maybe a pat on the back or a playful, "Hiya, buddy," punch on the shoulder. That expresses love to little boys. Little boys even learn to shun affection and kisses in public. Recently, I was walking past a city grade school about 8 o'clock in the evening. A mother came up to the school with her 2 children about 7 or 8 years old. She was holding her daughter's hand, and her son was bounding ahead of them. At the front door of the school, she bent down and gave her daughter a kiss and a big hug. The little girl threw her arms around her mother's neck and said, "Bye-bye, Mommy, see you later," and she went bouncing off into the school. The mother then bent over her son to do the same. The little boy stiffened and put his hands up to shield his face. "Mother, please don't kiss me while everybody is watching." The mother laughed and said, "Okay, buddy, put up your dukes." They had a playful boxing match for a few seconds before the boy trounced happily along after his sister into the school. Little girls, when playing with each other, touch each other more. They braid each other's hair or put their arms around each other when they're afraid. Male friends are more apt to wrestle or shoot each other in a game of cowboys and Indians or cops and robbers. Is it any wonder, then, that girls grow up connecting love with kisses and cuddles, and boys grow up connecting love with rough play or power games? The most striking difference, however, was not the actual fantasies. It was what men and women wanted to do with their sexual fantasies. It is curious to note, men's and women's fantasy desires were in direct contrast to their real-life stereotypes. In day-to-day matters, a woman usually likes to share sensitive information, and a man prefers to keep his thoughts to himself. However, in sex, many men want to share their sexual fantasies with a woman. Some even have a compelling desire to play-act them out with her. The Golden Rule tells us, do unto others that which you would have done unto you. This is good advice with your co-workers, 9 to 5 daytime, and with your friends, 5 to 9 in the evening. But after you bring in the dog, put out the cat, switch off the lights, and hop into bed with your lover, forget it. Forget the Golden Rule once the two of you are under the sheets. The Golden Rule causes big problems in sex. Because all too often, a man has sex with a woman the way a man likes it, sometimes too crude, too quick, too unromantic. And women make love to a man the way a woman wants it, sometimes too slow, too romantic, too emotional. Once you're under the covers with the opposite sex, discard the Golden Rule like a dirty Kleenex. Now, obviously, reading sex manuals and popular books which highlight, emphasize, and underscore our differences have not done the trick. Men continue turning women off with their unromantic triple X approaches, and women continue exasperating or boring men with their super soft G needs. Here's help. Huntresses first. You must become a sexual sleuth, a detective in sex to find out what really turns your unique, particular, individual man on in bed. Most huntresses just wing it with what we used to call the Peter meter. They try this. They try that, then they watch his reaction. Or they do their research smack dab in the middle of the action by asking, "Do you like this, honey? Does that feel good?" Enterprising huntresses ask, "Would you like anything else?" Good, but not good enough. To turn up the sexual electricity, you must don your Sherlock Holmes cap, grab your magnifying glass, and slink stealthily through all the twists and turns of his sexual psyche. You must become a sexual sleuth and uncover his core fantasies. To extract a man's core sexual preferences, you must peel back the protective layers he spent years meticulously constructing around them. It's incredible how we casually ask a man about his taste in food, films, books, music, sports, hobbies, but we leave out the most important one of all. How often have you looked a man straight in the eyes and asked, "What turns you on?" Asking a man what turns him on requires a bit more finesse, however, than just blurting it out like, "Hey, what's your favorite movie?" You should carefully choose the time, the place, the atmosphere, and your attitude. The time should be a relaxed time, but not when sex is in the immediate picture. The place should be somewhere private, but not the bedroom. The atmosphere should be conducive to letting him talk, uninterrupted, for a long, long time. And your attitude should be playful, mischievous, hopeful. Couch the question in a way that leaves no doubt in his mind that you are asking what really turns him on, that anything goes, the juicier the better. The goal is to get him to sing like a happy canary. If you want him to spill the beans, you must make your quarry feel safe giving you an honest answer to your question, "What turns you on?" Set the stage by letting him know that nothing would shock or turn you off. You will not be judgmental. You are a very open-minded woman. In fact, you enjoy far-out sex stories.